6 p.m. Alderman Merritt, Alderman Coe, Alderman Potter, and Alderman Hyatt present, and city staff. So, citizen comments. Do we have any citizens' comments? They're regarding on agenda items, take them at that point, right? You can, well, so this would be something that wouldn't be maybe on agenda items. Well, I'll allow them in when we do the agenda items.
Okay, okay.
So that way, don't come twice that way. If there's no other comments, we'll go for minutes for correction slash approval for, this will be for the April 1st, 2025 special meeting and the May 6th, 2025 meeting as well. Okay. All right, we'll take them as approved. New business. Item one, EDC 2025-46, building permit reports for March through May 2025. We did have a couple meetings that we did.
All right. So in March, we issued 16 single-family detached homes and 9 single-family attached, 15 commercial. Most of those were remodels and other alterations to the commercial buildings. It was a little bit slower month in March. We only did 84 permits in total, but that's what we expected, the tail end of winter, beginning of spring. And then in April, we issued 10 single-family detached and then 9 single-family attached with 12 commercial permits that month as well, but we had a total of 153 permits that month. And May, we issued 4 single-family detached and 20 single-family attached. The trend is going to the single-family attached homes and the townhomes, obviously. We've been talking about that for a while now. That seems to be what's left in Grand Reserve, so Garrett Horton's really going to town out there, as well as Abbey Construction's also building them, and they also have townhomes coming. So those all, and duplexes, those are all counting as single-family attached. That's what we're going to see in the future here until we have more lots open up.
Good. Okay, let me also mention that Alderman Funkhauser is online and a couple of other individuals online. So. Item 2, EDC 2025-47, building inspection reports for March through May of 2025.
Okay. In March, we did 406 inspections. We kept the vast majority of those in-house. We outsourced some plumbing stuff when I was doing other things. I couldn't make it to those, but in general, we kept most of the stuff in-house. In April, we did 611 inspections. Again, we kept most things in-house. And in May, we ended up with 631 inspections. And we are trying to keep as much as we can in-house with everything. But obviously, as we continue to get busier and busier, we'll have to outsource more, but we're trying to keep that to the minimum.
Item 3, EDC 2025-48, property maintenance reports for March through May 2025.
Okay, in March we did have some complaints come in, but most of those were all rectified before we had to issue a citation, so we didn't have any hearings in March. In April, we did hear a couple cases. One of those would be the Blue Stem property, again, that we've known about down the road here, that's always in violation. So that one was found in violation again. We did actually manage to speak with the gentleman who owns the property finally. He took our phone calls. And we just encouraged him to get the grass cut. We sent him a copy of the liens to date on the property from all the work Public Works has done and all the hearings. I think it totals between $21,000 and $26,000 for the last 3 years of not taking care of the grass. So we're talking with him. The communication is pretty rough, but he's speaking to us at least now. So hopefully we can get a cut in the future. I haven't seen any movement on it yet. We talked to him last week and this week, but that's NLS one that's been a concern for some of the board, and we're trying to do the best we can. And then in May, we ended up having 2 cases that went to hearing. They were both dismissed because they were in compliance by the time of hearing.
Okay. Chris, any concerns yet?
I'm good.
Okay. Item 4, EDC 2025-49, economic development reports for April through June 2025.
Obviously, a lot came through the last couple of months here. If you have any questions about anything on the report, go ahead and let me know. There is one verbal update from Joseph Ordo at Home Run Hot Dogs and Lemonade. They're going to be having their grand opening this coming Sunday, July 6th at 11. So they would love to have anyone from the city who's interested or willing to come out. That is the new hot dog and fresh squeezed lemonade stand that is, or not stand, business that is going in where Iconic Coffee was. It's attached to Fox Republic Brewing, but it will actually have a pass through into the brewery. So kind of a new concept there.
Okay, thank you. Item 5, EDC 2025-50, Project Cardinal, this is the Pioneer Data Center, Annexation Rezoning, Prelim PUD Plan and PUD, and I will let the take it from here. I think it's similar to what we've been seeing in the past, maybe a few tweaks.
Sure, yeah. So this is similar to the product that you saw at the EDC, the City Council public hearing a while ago. But there have been a few changes, so just to go over the history, and then I'll let the petitioner do their presentation. A little over 1,000 acres, 21 parcels total. There are 7 parcels that will be annexed, so there's 305 acres of that 1,037-acre overall site plan. 14 two-story buildings, 17 million square feet of building area. 2 substations, a utility switch yard, and then there's the associated stormwater management basins. The development will progress in phases, a total of 3 phases, with the full campus build-out expected within 10 years. So in staff's memo, we noted that the area that the property covers has 2 existing PUDs, one for Bailey Meadows and one for West Haven. Those total about 700 acres of the overall 1,000 acres, and those were planned to have collectively about 1,600 single-family, multifamily, residential land dwelling units. That, again, covers about 70% of the overall development. So because the West Haven development still operates under an active annexation and PUD agreement, that will be repealed once, if this development is approved. The annexation parcels, we had the public hearing on that on June 10th. Just to remind everyone that there are 4 parcels in the overall development that were not included as part of the current annexation petition. And those parcels, along Baseline Road and some along 47, slivers along 47, the petitioner has indicated that they are actively negotiating with these 4 property owners, and that when they do come to a resolution, they will annex those parcels at a later date. But there are no facilities or buildings planned on the areas where these parcels lie. The rezoning request is to go from the current land use zoning, and then upon annexation, those parcels will be R1. To the M2 General Manufacturing District, which allows for data center development. They're requesting a planned unit development. The PUD standards allow for flexibility in the zoning regulations, so they're collective of variances, but they have to demonstrate that the land use will be compatible with surrounding areas and it's necessary for the effective development of the site. So they have to meet certain standards. The developer has identified 2 modification standards from our ordinance that they meet. The first would be regional utility improvements, because they're going to extend some public water and sanitary services to the site, as well as funding or construction of public roadways. So the exterior roadways that they touch, they would be required to redevelop to our standards. The preliminary PUD plan that they provided was revised, so the original one that was introduced at the May 6th meeting for informational purposes has changed. The land plan has been updated on May 30th, and it outlines the site generally as it stood, but the layout does include designated utility corridors, drainage channels, and they also are reserving that southwest corner originally for water towers. They're just reserving that area for any future development, which could include a potential water utility expansion. They've identified landscape buffers, transition zones are integrated into the development for screening and sound mitigation. There are residential protection zones that they've identified for height restrictions. And then the developer, as I mentioned, has three primary access points to the site: Ash Road, Galena Road, and Baseline. These points of access are referenced on the site plan. They'll be fenced, they'll be guarded stations, and they will require extensive security verification before entry. The petitioner had mentioned that they will be providing an updated site plan, which may or may not include access to Ash Road, but I'll let the petitioner address that when they speak. And then phasing of the development, three phases. As currently proposed, the phasing will occur from west to east. This is determined by ComEd's allocation of power. And phase one would include buildings 1 through 4, as well as the switchyard and detention areas. Phase two will consist of buildings 8 through 14 and a substation and 2 detention ponds. And phase three will include buildings 5 through 7 and a third substation and additional detention. They have stated in a narrative that they anticipate that the project will become operational within 24 months of groundbreaking of a building. The PUD deviations, there are 13. I won't go into specifics unless you are requesting their setbacks, but they are going to maintain the separation requirements that staff had recommended, which is a building-to-building 500-foot separation from adjacent residential. They're going to actually exceed that. The maximum building height, they're going to be 55 feet tall. If there's no rooftop equipment, and if rooftop equipment is required or necessary for noise mitigation, it'll be 78 feet at the very top. Parking requirements, they're proposing to have 3,700, a little bit more of 3,700 parking spaces, and 104 electric vehicle charging stations. There's language in staff's recommendations that if they go below the required EV charging stations, there will be a payment in lieu of to the city, where we can then install charging stations in other places within the city. The developer, in lieu of providing pedestrian circulation interior to the site, they are going to provide easements for a 10-foot multi-use walking trail. They will also construct the trail and design it and construct it. There's a map in here showing you the location. So they'll be along 47, Baseline, Galena, and Ash. And these will be exterior to the site, available for residents to access. The petitioner did provide an updated landscaping plan, where they are only seeking deviation or relief from our minimum parking area interior landscape zone, but they have provided in the updated landscape plan prepared by Burns McDonald a prairie mix seeding and planting throughout the interior of the site. There was a comment that came up at the last EDC meeting, as well as enhanced landscaping within the lot, the parking lot area. As mentioned previously, they are going to provide undulating 8-foot tall berms along select perimeter areas in response to the site's adjacency to the 4 public roadways. And where it's not feasible to do the 8-foot tall berms, such as in utility corridors, they are providing alternative landscaping screening, which will be implemented to address and maintain adequate visual buffering. Mechanical screening, we have engaged a sound engineer to evaluate the preliminary PUD plan. Comments were provided. They are in the process of completing a preliminary sound study, which we will be reviewing and then providing comments as well. And then just to finish up, the petitioner is continuing to coordinate with Kendall County on site access as final roadway alignments are under review. And the ordinance that was just passed about operational standards for data centers, all of those standards are included within this agreement. Staff supports the change in land use from the comprehensive plan designation, as this is the trend that is happening in the area along Elda Main Road, and this is a great opportunity to create gateway signage and enhance the roadway with landscaping elements as recommended in the comprehensive plan. This project will also have a separate development agreement and infrastructure funding agreement, which will come before you before final adoption. This will address some community contributions as well as design engineering and payment schedules and possibly potential recapture provisions. The petitioner did hold a community meeting the week of May 26th, as well as a separate Zoom meeting on June 5th with the Bristol Bay HOA residents. If you have any questions for the petitioner, I think they have a brief presentation.
Very brief.
They can address any of your questions.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Christy. That was a great job. Hello again. My name is Dave Silverman. I'm the attorney for the developer, and with me is Matt McCarron, who's a developer representative for Pioneer. I don't really have much to say beyond what Christy did. She did an outstanding job of describing the project, other than to say we have considered the comments from the neighbors, and we'll be making the change to Ash Road to remove that as an entrance exit point there. So that, I hope, will alleviate some of the concerns from the folks to the west. There are right now 12 trees on the property. We're going to work around all those to preserve them. And as Christy mentioned, we're enhancing the landscaping on the interior site also to add more trees in there and more and add the prairie grasses that were requested to help preserve the property as well as possible. Also, we've looked at the Rob Roy Creek over to the east side on 47. We're going to completely work around that and not put any entrances on 47 so that area can be preserved as well as possible. The four parcels that Christy mentioned that are not in this plan, they're really not shown on the concept plan, but they are now under contract, so we'll be talking with Christy and her team about how to add those into this process or a follow-up process. That's, I think, all we have, and we're happy to answer any questions that you folks may have or the public may have.
So at this point, I'll let anybody from the public that wants to ask any questions, staff or the developer.
Yes. Questions or make comments?
If you have questions that you want to ask, just give you an open connection for that.
I don't have any questions of the petitioners,
okay.
But we do have some comments.
Okay. Yeah, now would be the time.
Okay. Make sure you state your name.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, my name is Gil Rios, and we lived on Galena Road there for 60-some years. We're on just at the very corner of East Beecher Road. We're concerned that they're about the entrance going into the data center. I saw the map a little while ago there. It appears that it looked going to be going into where the, if the map can be put back up again, it appears that the entrance is going to be with the old Robinson houses at, or the old schoolhouses at. I just want to make sure that does not deviate from that and put it back close to the East Beecher Road. Is that just west of Undesser and before Jim?
This is just west of Undesser, yes. This is the Undesser property here, if I remember correctly. There's this is another entrance here.
Yeah, we're right in the corner of East Beecher Road. Is that the final flat where the entrance is going to be for the data center?
So the entrance by East Beecher Road right there, that's actually an emergency entrance. So it's not going to be used outside of for emergency purposes, that hopefully there'll never be an emergency on site.
So there won't be any traffic by our area going in
no,
and out of the center?
There will not be any active traffic right there.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Bernie Weiler, Mickey Wilson, et al. We represent, as attorneys for the Homeowners Association, on the west side of Ash Road. One of the things that we really want the city to take into consideration is the dedication and the planned dedication of 3,000 acres of land that is going to be dedicated to data centers. Okay, that is a significant percentage of the land mass of any community of this size. And when you develop and dedicate to that single use, this is not a use that is conducive to communicating part of your community to another portion of your community. So you're really taking these land masses and making them inaccessible to traffic. And you need to think about what that means in terms of community development. There is there was comments made with regard to how the landscaping and how the trees are going to be reintroduced into the environment. The comment was, well, it's farmland now, there's no trees there. That's a different consideration than how a community is developed. In almost every other instance, you have the ability to communicate from one portion of the development to another, and there are interior reforestation agreements that when you take farmland and develop it, that there are additional requirements that you, put a lot of trees around there. And so there has been a comment that this development, even though the developer wants to keep the cost proprietary, had indicated that it's probably going to be in excess of what it would cost to build a bare stadium, which is $5 billion. So we would think that the prairie grass is nice, but we would like to see some reforestation efforts made in addition to that prairie grass, and I know Dave has indicated that some trees will be introduced. But if you look at this plan, what you have is just a very, very, very narrow strip of land surrounding this with no tree development or landscaping interiorly. So what you then are developing is a very monotonous arrangement of buildings with no variegation of vegetation within that. So we'd like to see some concern, some attention paid to that. There has been some, apparently the heights of these buildings are a little moving target. It was indicated that these are going to be two-story buildings. Originally, we were told that they were going to be 70 feet. That's more akin to a five-story or six-story building, or a five-story building. Even if it's 55 feet, that's significantly higher than your customary two-story building. So the heights of the buildings are of significant concern to the residents who would like to see the sun come up, before 10 o'clock in the morning. So the heights of the building are a concern. I do want to indicate that these concerns, we have had responses from the developer and also from the city staff that are attentive to these concerns. So we're not saying that this is something that is absolutely, being ignored, but we do want to make sure that as this PUD goes along, that we, have some attention paid to these issues. We're trying not to be duplicative of the comments that are being made, so we have other residents that are going to address other issues. But these are some of the principal concerns that we have, and we really do want to have some real attention paid to the idea of 3,000 acres being concentrated for this one particular use that will not have, that where access will be confined to the people who work there. So that's one of the big concerns.
Ben?
Yeah, I think Ryan Anderson from Legacy Farms, one of the other concerns that we've talked about, and we've seen the sound study devices going on, but to urge the committee that we have never seen the size and scope of a data center this big, and correct me, but it could be the largest one in the world at 17 million square feet?
I don't think it's going to be the largest in the world.
No. In the United States.
As a development, there are others that are larger that are being proposed, thousands of acres, 2,000 or 3,000 acres for one. Usually they're split into different buildings. I believe the largest contiguous building in the world is right around 10 million square feet.
Okay, so but we're looking at 17 million.
Between 14
buildings. Between the buildings. I'm saying, so whether it's 14 buildings at 17 million square feet or 10 million, whatever it is, we're still concerned about the noise. So I know the sound studies are going on, but what happens when those are done and what happens when it's too loud? Is it just going to be a penalty to the property that they're going to have to pay? We're going to have to hear they're going to be fined, like the gentleman that can't cut his grass? I mean, because we're there. We have to live within 500 feet of this thing.
Yeah, it's a type of noise as well.
Sure. I guess I'll give the standard answer. It would be anytime there's an ordinance violation, it would be similar to cutting grass where you go to city court and take the circuit court through, for enforcement needed. But then also the negotiation of the PUD agreement, the annexation agreement are ongoing, and so there may or may not be some teeth related to that in there. So, for us,
what does that mean? There's homeowners that are living next to it.
What? The standard process is you get a notice, you get a citation, you go to city court, you're issued fines. As a non-home municipality currently, I think we're limited to around $2,500 per citation, which is basically like a per day fine. As for a non-home rule, we create more flexible rules and increase those fines if needed. And then I also mentioned, we haven't finalized the negotiation of the PUD agreement or the different development agreements too. And I would anticipate that some of those may or may not have additional remedies in the
right. I mean, that we would want some sort of remediation.
Noted.
If it exceeds the limits, that there's remediation, that it's not just a series of fines that continue to get paid or not paid.
I would anticipate we're going to have that same conversation related to water use regulations as well in the development agreement. So, thank you.
Okay. One of the things that I forgot to mention, and again, we don't want to duplicate things. There have been some projections that property values are going to increase around these developments. The data that we've been looking at shows that that's not always true and is often the reverse. So I think that as this goes along, we'll be supplying some data with regard to the economic effect on property surrounding these data centers, which do not always bear the same consequence as projected. When we have this rosy picture that all of this revenue is going to come in and schools are now going to be free and all our property values are going to increase, because the data doesn't show that to be the case for surrounding properties.
And that's right in the PUD standard number 2. Blah blah blah, nor substantially diminished. And
your name.
I will. Okay. I'm John Bryan. I live in Legacy and I have some other property in around the area. So I have a few questions, and I'm gonna limit my questions because this is the Economic Development Committee. So I'm gonna limit it to that. There's been talk of the infrastructure improvement that the Pioneer Development's gonna bring in. Done a lot of developments in my past life, and every single developer had to pay for those infrastructure improvements, whether it was industrial or residential. So I kind of think that's a moot point. And even if they do run water lines or run electricity, anybody that taps into that gets an impact fee, so they get their money back. So that happens. I have not worked on one development, and I did hundreds, if not a thousand of them, that wasn't the case. So I think that's kind of a moot point. And then you talk about baseline road being improved. I did see that Pioneer Development LLC was incorporated or indoctrinated, whatever, with the Secretary of State of Illinois in May of 2024. Baseline Road was reconstructed to a 25-year standard, maybe even more than that, just last year. So those plans were well before this development LLC was even incorporated in the state of Illinois. So that road's already been done. And you're talking about Alden Main Road. When I moved in, I bought my property 20-some years ago. It was zoned residential. It still is. Great. Pulte Del Webb had a contract to buy it. Great Recession hit. Still zoned residential. Great, I'm gonna buy, because you know what? I'm not gonna have to live next to, you know, industrial, because I also know that Alden Main was built as a concrete highway, 40-year pavement, based on being built for industrial. Perfect. Ash Road, no way. It's not built that way. It's a rural road. Completely want to change that, pull the rug out, whatever you want to call it, but it doesn't match the character of Alden Main. So I did hear some height talks real quick, so as I just write down notes. Does the 55 feet include the height of a crane during construction? I highly doubt it. Highly, highly doubt it. And with the airport being so close, you are going to have flags and whatnot on those cranes, which we will all see of anyone that lives around there. You talked about Rob Roy drainage ditch. Why not get an ingress egress off of Route 47? Route 47 is in phase two engineering. It's done. We've all seen the tree removal. We've all seen the demo. The next step is to let the contractor build the road. It's going to be substantial. It's going to be a couple, 3 years. Why doesn't Pioneer Development go to IDA, get a permit to get an ingress egress to come off of 47? It's obviously done the entire way from Cannonball, well, even past that, because you got the M&Ms or you got Mars, all the way through. There's ingress and egresses all along 47. Why is that? You're going to need 1,000 feet of probably 1,000 feet for a deacceleration lane on both sides. You need a left turn lane and a right turn lane. So you're going to need 1,000 feet of box culvert to put in. Probably going to cost $10 million. To this project, $10 million? That's a coin to you and me. That's flushing the toilet for you and me. So why are we ignoring a concrete four-lane highway that will be in the next 2 years? I don't understand why this talk about ingresses and egresses off of rural roads. You're totally destroying the rural character of the entire project.
The order of construction from west to east.
Right. The order of construction from west to east. Why? I mean, we were told the very first meeting back, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months ago, that the reason that was because you wanted to make sure it didn't look bad for the people coming into Yorkville, which was the same reason why the exterior of the buildings were going to look better around 47 versus the rest of the place. So we got to look at ugly, but you know, Yorkville looks great. You know, Yorkville's going to become known as the data center of the United States. I think you're going to have to change the logo on the city website. You know, there was also a question, since we're talking economics. What's the business community think? Okay, so you've got I don't know what is it, 3,700 parking places, but that's per code. How many people are going to be in those buildings? You're going to take 1,037 acres prime development for no business to get, except maybe some pizza deliveries, if they can get through the garbage can. The businesses of this community are not going to benefit on this at all. And, you know, I really wasn't expected to talk tonight, but, you know, the people in our subdivision, we built it as our forever home. I mean, you want to see, I'm 62 years old. For 20, this is going to be a 20-year build-out. I'll be dead before it's done. So I'll be eating dust for 20 years for this project. And that's not what I—that's not what I was sold on when I bought my place and built my house and set my roots in Kendall County. And I don't see. I get it. There's great money in it, but it was zoned residential. It was zoned that way, rezoned that way. And now you're going to change your mind, and we're the ones that are going to have to see the real economic impact of considerable loss of value to our homes. Considerable. Because there's no way you can't see that. Because we are not going to get any of the economic benefits. We just won't. We don't pay any Yorkville service fees. We're not in Yorkville. We are being taxed without being represented, which, happy 4th of July, taxation without representation. That's how this country was founded. And I don't see it. I don't see it with this happening. I see it all the way down Eldamene. I appreciate that. I get it. It's a concrete road. And it's a concrete road on the other side. And you mentioned that it's easier to come down Eldamene. But why? I know where that substation is. Why don't you go down Beecher Road? You got two ways you can go. You can go east and west. But you're going to go down Eldamene, so it comes right onto Ash. And Ash is where we set our roots. So, I mean, that's the economic impact for me. That's the economic impact I see for the community. And I just, rah-rah, 4th of July, taxation without representation. You're seeing it right here. That's all I have to say, for now.
Is there any other comments? If not, go.
I'm good.
Matt,
any questions? I just had a question on a couple of things. One, it's kind of been clarified based on the parking spaces. So there's mention in the packet here, kind of regarding where the property lines were established, resident versus actual end of property line. Do we know if there's been any clarification? It talks about the facts of building 1, 2, 7, 9, 12, 13, and 14, and that may shift.
Sure. So if you recall at our last meeting at City Council, we talked about the building-to-building separation, the residential impact of a setback line. Cardinal does not have any buildings that will be within that 1,500 foot for the
height
restriction, right? The nearest, the structure to structure will be about 700 feet. But then those are not the buildings that are indicated 1 through 4. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Regarding the landscaping and the types of plant vegetation, specifically trees, do we have any idea what trees are going to go in there, what preliminary heights they are, what they'll grow to, and how long they'll stay?
So the landscape plan did have, and I can't recall what species, but our ordinance requires for every 100 linear feet, you have to plant 5 understory trees, 5 canopy or evergreen trees, and 35 shrubs or native grasses. So that's for every 100 linear feet. So their frontage exceeds probably about 6, 7, maybe 1,000 feet.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have that times 10.
Just to follow up on that one, then. Mm-hmm. So if it was to happen, could they, before they actually start building, would they start from the outside with the landscaping to get those trees started, or would those trees come at the end?
That's typically the landscaping.
Yeah, so the berm work and the landscaping typically starts at the start.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the borders are made, and there's basically a buffer. So there's a berm buffer, there's a landscaping buffer with trees and shrubs to insulate everything.
Okay.
One thing I'd like to address too, Ryan, I know your comment about ongoing sound study. It's not the intention of this data center campus to make noises and then just eat the fines. That's not how it's going to work. And I don't think it's like somewhat confidential, but in our ongoing PUD agreement negotiations, we're going to have ongoing noise monitoring that are always going to have to be met.
I get it, and I appreciate that. I'm just saying the magnitude of what we're talking about has never been heard before. And when we're there and we have to live by it, that's, it's constant for us. I mean, nobody else, you know, our neighborhood and a few homes scattered around it.
I think the fear is too, is that you or anybody else would operate and then eat the fines, you know, because we're making so much money that our fines may not matter. And so our goal obviously is to come to an understanding or, you know, a regulatory place where that doesn't occur. So, because we're seeing that in other states with I think Memphis and air pollution and some other things, which is a little bit of a different story, but you know that's the place that we don't want to get to.
Yeah.
And with regard to that, one of the concerns was building from the perimeter in versus from the center out, where the more mature that screening becomes to the perimeter. And so I understand that Commonwealth Edison might want to come closer to the west side, but you can also deliver that power interiorly. So I think a plan that concentrated on the original buildings being built on the interior so that when you get to the exterior, that screening is more mature, and you also have some confidence that that this will be a successful venture and will not be abandoned, and then we have to figure out what the next use is going to be for those places that are close to residential uses. So we'd also like to some attention to be paid to that aspect.
Rusty?
I have a question on the walking path. Is there going to be trees on both sides or just the...
No.
No, just on one side of it.
Trees would be on toward the inside of it.
Right, yeah. So you'll have the trail. Right,
so
of
you
way
have
trail.
Rob Roy Creek on the 47 side, and then a trail, and then...
Yeah. Correct, yeah. So there's actually some acreage to the east of Rob Roy Creek, and that'd be Rob Roy Creek, and then there'd be a trail, and then there'd be a berm with landscaping.
Chris?
Okay, so on that for the trail, so just stick on to Route 47. Is it Route 47, the creek, the trail, and then the landscaping?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. Then I know that there was mentioned that there were easements for the trails on all four perimeter sides. I couldn't quite hear if it was said that the developer will build the trail.
That is staff's recommendation, that the developer will design, build, and install the trails.
Perfect, thank you. And then the berm, I know it is an 8-foot undulating. Is 8 foot the average height or the top maximum height of the berm?
I don't know if you've gotten that far in the landscaping.
Yeah,
topography.
Kind of preliminary to make a decision, Chris. It could tentatively be higher as well, if that's preferred in some places where it's appropriate.
Chris, do you hear Matt's response?
I did not hear that response, sorry.
They haven't made it that far in the planning process to be able to identify it, but he did say that it could potentially be higher if desired. So I think that that's a detail we can work through.
Perfect, and that's really what I want to get at with the undulating berm. Then, for the landscape, in certain instances, you know, key locations, I'd like the developer to consider going above and beyond the minimum plant material sizes by the ordinance, and possibly increasing some of the sizes of plant materials, you know, along certain buffers. growth and maturity of those plants earlier on. And then another one, two more points. The northeast corner of the site at 30 and, baseline and 47, would the developer consider giving or providing an easement for any type of like community gateway for the city to use on the corner?
He's looking for a monument sign location. We've talked about the monument signs at all the major corridor entrances to the city on site. I don't know that we've gotten into the details to say, hey, there needs to be a 10-foot by 10-foot easement or whatever it ends up being, but the concept of having entranceway signage has been discussed.
Okay, thank you. And then the last one, it's about the native landscaping on the site. Doing a little digging, looking back to the BLM land surveys from 1830s and the 1830s and 1870s, this site was noted as being all prairie at the time. I'm glad that this site does have about 42 or 45% open space on it that is going to be, you know, naturally preserved, naturally planted, I should say, and restored to what it was, you know, 150 years ago. I would like to see if, you know, some clusters of native trees could be added to the interior of the site in order to achieve, you know, what the native area would have looked like I said, 150 plus years ago. So that is, you know, as working through the design process, I would, you know, like to have that consideration be given as they're doing the open space areas.
Good with that. Christy, is that?
And that's all I have for right now. I think everything else has been answered or discussed with the presentations.
So just, Chris, on that last point, so on the updated plan that will be shared shortly, there will be a substantial amount of trees planted in the interior of the project.
And that's in and amongst the buildings and the parking lots, correct?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what I was more looking at is some of these larger areas that are maybe outside of that, maybe some, you know, sporadic clustering of you know, native fir oaks or things that would have been native out in the prairie area.
Yeah, so as long as there is no interference with CABED's updated corridor plans,
absolutely,
there will be trees planted properly. Yeah, it's not the intention just to leave, you know, blank space, basically. I think you'll be happy with the updated site plan that we will be sharing shortly.
Okay.
Great.
Are those facilities going to be overhead?
The lines?
Yeah.
It's up to CABED.
I guess I prefer them not to be. Did CABED pretty much say this is the way it's got to be phased?
Yes, you do not tell a utility.
I've dealt with them before, and they've delayed a project for over 2 years because they wouldn't move the pole, so I get it.
But there are ways. Speaking of comments, so I guess I do have a question, and I don't know, but for those of you who are old, like I am, this recent heat wave has jarred some old memories from 1988. What happens if we have another 1988? I mean, I know plenty of electric friends in the industry, these are power gurus. But currently, east of the Mississippi, you can build as many windmills and solar farms, and data farms, or whatever. And I know that the power for this particular plant, according to the first meeting, is coming from some solar farms in Iowa. What happens if we do have an extended 1988 again? For those of you who remember the brownouts, even in Chicago they have brownouts. Most of them were on the East Coast. Is there a way that ComEd's going to decide who gets power and who doesn't? I mean, if there is a power problem in the United States, especially, like I said, east of Mississippi, where the transmission lines are so outdated, is there going to be, say the ComEd's going to have a brownout. Who gets power? The data centers or the United City of Yorkville or our little subdivision or the other industries within the area. I think that's something that we all realize right now, because there's a, I mean, let's face it, I mean, I spent a couple hours clearing out my air conditioning unit for all the, you know, cottonwoods that are on there to make sure it's running more efficiently. But I think that's something that needs to be asked to comment also. What does happen? I mean, you are taking an enormous amount of power all down El Domain and maybe all the way down Ashe. Who gets first dibs of the power? The people or Pioneer Development? I think that's a legitimate question to ask, comment. And I've dealt with the utilities for a very, very long time, and I get it. I get what you're saying. That's not always true. And there's plenty of powers to be in Springfield and everywhere else that could get a utility to change their mind. I've dealt with them for 40 years. It can be done. And believe me, the money that they're making on these data centers is enormous. There's no reason why they cannot move that power down to the center of that field first. I mean, Pioneer Development might have to pay for it, but the last meeting they wouldn't even reveal how much it's going to be worth when it's completed. You'll be able to buy the Chicago Bears a couple, two, three times maybe for what this thing's going to be worth. So if ComEd can't be, they will change the power. And there are powers to be, no pun intended, in Springfield to get that done.
So, Christy, where does this go next?
Next week, there's a public hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission. So that'll be July 9th at 7 p.m.
Okay. And then after that?
Then it'll return to City Council. We don't have a firm date, but we are expecting it to be the end of July at the earliest.
Okay. And will the information at Planning and Zoning be exactly what we had here tonight, or could there be more?
I'm hoping
it'll be updated.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have the DOI study back as well for everybody to review.
Item new business number 6. This is EDC 2025-51 Kendall County petition 25-04, 1.5 mile review, Gorman and Zutlick.
Yes. So for this one, it's a Kendall County petition for a 1.5 mile review. Daniel Gorman on behalf of USA Energy Independence, the prospective buyer, and Stanley Zutlick, the current owner, are seeking a special use permit for a commercial solar energy facility and variance to the Kendall County zoning ordinance to allow a commercial solar energy facility on land within a 1.5 miles of a municipality without an annexation agreement. The property is located north of Cornelius Road and approximately 0.5 mile east of Route 47 in unincorporated Kendall County. The property is 37 acres in size. The site is currently is undeveloped and utilized for agricultural purposes. The city of Yorkville's corporate boundaries borders the subject property to the west, east, and north. Cornelius Crossing is located immediately west. Bristol Bay Subdivision is approved PUD. It's located immediately north. And Bristol Ridge Subdivision, which is also a PUD, is located immediately west. In 2023, the Bristol Ridge PUD was amended to allow solar farm development east of Cannonball Trail and north of the BNSF Railway, which is less than 0.5 mile away from the subject property. The property is also bordered by unincorporated residence properties to the south, east, and west. Radiant Waves Water Park is also located within 0.5 mile west of the subject property. The petitioner reached out to the city of Yorkville in late 2024 to see if the city was interested in entering into a pre-annexation agreement. The site is unincorporated and contiguous to the United City of Yorkville. Among staff, consensus among staff was that the city would not support the solar farm annexation development due to directly adjacent to several resident homes, new utility poles being proposed near existing residential properties to the east, and it also does not meet the city's required minimum setback of 1,000 feet from a roadway. Thank you. The plan also proposes a setback of approximately.
We can boot him downstairs though.
Right.
Are we good to go?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It totally my mind.
Sorry.
Yeah, the one main thing for the city is required minimum setback of 1,000 feet was not met with the site plan. It was approximately 800 feet when it was first submitted in late 2024. They updated their site plan in 2025, and they actually decreased their site plan setback from 800 feet to 500 feet, which is a 300-foot difference. Staff reiterated that the city would not be interested in pursuing a pre-annexation agreement and encouraged them to reach out to Kendall County. And they have filed a variance, so here we are today. The proposed development is in the A1 Ag District in Kendall County. This is for a 5-megawatt AC community solar farm. The project would have approximately 12,000 solar panel arrays on site. The maximum structure height is just under 11 feet full tilt, and the setbacks to the nearest residence are 250 feet, and from a residential property line, it's about 150 feet. The security fence on site would be approximately 6 feet in height. Lastly, should the county review and approve this, the 2016 comprehensive plan designation for the property is a state conservation residential. The city would have to amend its comprehensive plan most likely to agricultural zone designation. The planning commission actually already reviewed this back in June. The commission on a tally of 5-1 recommended approval not to object the request. And the county has also had a few meetings as well. Each of those have been pretty favorable and recommended approval from the Kendall County Regional Planning Commission. I know that was a lot, so if you have any questions, please let me know. Petitioner is also here tonight. He's over there. That's Dan. And if everything would go well, this would go to July 8th, so the next city council meeting for a voice vote.
So we just said no because it wasn't in our area?
Well, it didn't meet any of our setback requirements that we established for solar, and it was okay. So close to residential.
The no was both an informal opinion to Kendall County about whether we would support it, so basically guessing what you guys would say. But then also, did they ask us to annex, consider annexation?
They did.
Correct. As part of this, whenever somebody comes to the county, usually say, hey, you know, you need to go annex to the city. And when they approached us, based on our ordinance, I said, I didn't think we'd support this. I don't think we'd want to annex this. No. So.
Yeah. And so the PZC did not want to, or they did?
They did not oppose it. So our PZC said that we would not oppose this if it goes forward through the county.
Well, I oppose it.
So how would that work? So we would have to, if you have an objection to it as an entire body, you would need to make a motion at the next meeting to be able to do that. And then that would change the approval authority for Kendall County, provided it hasn't already been voted on by the county.
I'm
a little confused now. Their timing is independent of our answer, basically.
Right, so they can vote for it.
Correct. The county will vote for it.
If we oppose it, they got to go to a supermajority.
We would have to have.
No, they would, to push it through.
Okay. So it's applying to the county. The county comes to us and says, hey, what do you think about this? It's within your mile and a half. If we say we do not like it as an entire board, then the threshold for voting it to be approved at the county level changes from simple majority to simple majority.
Doesn't mean that it gets stopped.
Okay. Right. That's what I thought. Usually it's smart for us to stop it.
Right.
We just got to say in the process, essentially.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yell at Peterson.
I see. Chris? Do you have an opinion or?
You know Chris doesn't like solar, right?
That'll be two notes in, right?
Chris, can you hear?
I do like solar. I don't mind it, just not in this type of a location.
I gave the Cliff Notes version, sorry.
So, what are you looking for? I don't know how to speak. Okay, sure.
My name is Dan Gorman. I'm the senior developer at USA Energy Independence One. And I just wanted to touch real base about sort of where we're at in the process and what we've done for community outreach thus far. Early on in the stage, we've contacted all of the neighbors surrounding, not just the notification letters required for our county permits, but additional letters explaining the project, showing the site plan, and soliciting feedback. I've had the opportunity to talk to the vast majority of neighbors in that area, and they're actively supporting the project. We had an informal meeting at Bristol Township where we presented our project. We were able to answer to the questions that a lot of the community members had. And after the meeting, not one of the persons came up to me and said that they were against it. At the next township board meeting, we had a formal vote to see if they support the project, and they unanimously voted in favor of our project at that township meeting after hearing all the comments from the residences. We have gone to the county on this because, again, we originally approached the city for annexation, and it was explained to us at the time that we just didn't meet the 1,000-foot setback and a couple other concerns, one of which, of course, is that I know some other solar projects in Yorkville have received pushback from neighbors. This project, of course, is different because we have support from the neighbors in that regard. We are still over 500 feet away from Corneal's Road, which at least not yet is not a major thoroughfare, although I understand that you might consider it potentially being a major thoroughfare. There's already substantial screening both on the west, south, and east side of it, full-grown trees that screen all the local residences. We are, again, 500 feet from the road, and we'll be adding additional tree screening to that road to make sure it's not visible from that community. In addition, that parcel is not particularly well suited for residential development. It currently is the runoff from the agricultural field is flooding the properties to the south in heavy rainfall events. The nice thing about community solar is we're only changing the impermeability of the ground by less than 2%, so a very de minimis change. We'll have plenty of space for remediation measures that will not only remediate our additional potential runoff, but actually remediate the existing runoff onto those neighbors' property. If you were going to try to develop that into something with houses, with roads and foundations, you'd be changing the impermeability substantially in ways that would be very difficult to remediate, or at the very least would take up a substantial amount of that parcel in order to remediate the wetland and water inundation. So in that regard, we are in the county property. It is a good project. We'll have substantial environmental and economic benefits to the community. 5-megawatt solar gardens like this generate about $14 million of community investment over the course of their lifetime. They have substantial tax revenue. And in addition to that, we're entering into a community benefit agreement with Kendall County that will provide a substantial amount of revenue directly to the county, because they requested that as an alternative to what could be potential residences that they continue to build on that parcel. So they are, in that regard, also being compensated in and above the increased tax revenue that our project itself will generate. So if anyone has any questions about that or our project, I can go into a little bit more about the economic development benefits as well as the environmental benefits if anyone has any questions.
I kind of lean toward how you feel about it.
Just because it doesn't meet any of our standard stuff.
Huh?
Just because it doesn't meet any of our standards.
Yeah, and so how do we, is this going to be a full council vote then? Is that what the next step is?
Yeah, there's a consensus here of the city, of the committee. We can take it forward to city council and have a motion for the next meeting. So
that's probably what we'll do then.
Okay.
Okay, item 7, EDC 2025-52, Heartland Meadows West, final plat.
Yes, so Greg Marker, who is here tonight on behalf of...
That's brothers, too.
But Greg Marker, on behalf of Marker Inc., is requesting a final plat approval for the Heartland Meadows West development, which consists of 20 single-family residential lots intended for an active adult community and for commercial outlots. The development reflects the approved amendment to the Kendall County or the Kendall Marketplace PUD agreement, including the preliminary subdivision plat and the final PUD plan. An image of the final plat and staff's analysis is in the packet, but overall, the submitted final plat satisfies and matches the exhibits established in the January 2025 approval. The proposed final plat has also been reviewed by the city's engineering consultant, and the minor revisions requested by the city engineer will be addressed prior to the city council meeting and prior to the final plat recordation. And then upon recordation and approval of the final plat, staff will proceed with establishing the dormant SSA. And staff believes these submitted plans are consistent with the approved development site plan and the current subdivision control regulations. And this item will be going to PZC on July 9th and then City Council on July 22nd.
Kelly Holland on behalf of the petitioner, who's here with Clayton Marker of Marker Development. We believe that the final plat substantially conforms with the preliminary plat and would be seeking a positive recommendation.
Good. We'll go with that one.
Good. Good. Matt. Yep. Chris? Just a, I think we might have a thing. Item 8, EDC 2025-53, Fox Haven 115.comment LLC final plat.
Yep, so this one's for Fox Haven final plat approval. Patrick Winninger filed an application requesting a final plat approval for Fox Haven subdivision, which consists of two parcels. Parcel 1 consists of 17 residential buildings totaling 105 townhome units on approximately 13 acres and is zoned R4. The other parcel is on an acre and is zoned B3 for future commercial development. The parcels and lots regarding this final plat, there's 107 lots on the 14-acre site at 115 South Bridge Street. Parcel 1 consists of 106 lots. Lot 1 is approximately 10 acres. It would include all the site common areas. The other 105 lots would include the individual townhomes. Parcel 2 is about an acre and is zoned B3. PUD related elements are related items that need to be addressed during the final plat process were vehicle access to subject property. That's regarding the cross access easements. They've included language on the final plat, so that is covered. And then the second one would be regarding appearance standards. They can provide updated elevations at the time of final plat or during the building permit submittal process. The developer says they will submit those elevations at the building submittal process. The engineer review from EEI has reviewed the final plat and has provided comments. Those would be addressed in prior to the city council meeting and before the plat is recorded. Staff, once we had this information and reviewed it, upon review, staff believes the submitted plans are consistent with the approved development site plans and intends to recommend approval at the July 9th Planning and Zoning Commission. Just like the other final plat, this would also go to the City Council July 22nd if all goes well. And once the plat is recorded, it will be a dormant SSA ordinance proposing and establishing an SSA for the plat area.
Guys?
Yeah, nothing to add unless you have any questions.
So you're going to start toward the 47th side of the property, right?
Yeah, it would start east to west. East to west.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what I thought.
No.
Matt? Nope. Chris? All right. Old business. We have none. Any additional business?
Good.
Meeting adjourned 7:08.